Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information on this, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, we'll get an update from our friend Ken Pope. So, with the recent CERB and that versus ODSP, can you tell me a little bit about what those on ODSP might expect in terms of taxes should they accept the funding?
It's pretty straightforward, really. Firstly, once a person, in order for a person to receive EI or necessarily CERB, because now you can only get CERB if you apply for EI payments. Of course, you have to have been working a certain number of hours or dollars over a certain period of time. But for those who are on ODSP and working and reporting it every month, of course, they have an adjusted offset against ODSP benefits. That's all standard procedure. So when a person applies for CERB, which is a fixed $2,000 a month for a certain number of months, it's treated as employment income by ODSP. Which is a good thing, because otherwise it's usually, for example, employment insurance payments are offset dollar for dollar. CERB, thankfully, is being treated as employment income, and you only lose 50 cents for every dollar, so this is advantageous. So basically, if a person receives $2,000 a month CERB, they lose $1,000 ODSP. If they were previously receiving $1,169, standard maximum, simple maximum amount, well, then they'll still receive $169 and drug and dental and all those things. And the ODSP stub, some months back, started to have it printed on it. CERB will be deducted the following month. So there may well be some slippage. Some people may find that they receive the full amount of CERB each month, and ODSP had some slippage and they haven't deducted an equivalent amount. So, for example, it wouldn't be inconceivable to see that someone could easily have a $1,000 overpayment just due to slippage. Well, what will happen is that overpayment will be put on their monthly check, their stub, and their benefits will be decreased by 5% or approximately $50 a month for something like 20 months until the $1,000 overpayment is recovered. The CERB itself is being reported as income, and it'll be treated as income. So if you were employed in 2020 for January, February, March, you had that income, then you have CERB income of $2,000 a month for, let's say, 6 months. That means that if you don't work if you don't have any other income for the balance of the year, if CERB ends and you don't go back to work, which hopefully one will, but then you'll have approximately, for example, $13,000 of income. Well, the personal tax credit for every individual for 2020 is $13,229. So the first $13,229 that every Canadian working or receiving a taxable income receives is not taxed. It's not very much. You can't live on it. I have no idea why it's that amount.
So
it was just increased from last year, more than inflation, which is nice. And then, if a person also happens to qualify for the disability tax credit, which is another $8,400 approximately, then a further $8,400 also would not be taxed. So this is approximately $21,500, that would not be taxed. A person on ODSP, or any person, would have to have income from all sources, employment, investment, whatever, of greater than either the basic amount, $13,229, or approximately $21,600, so, before there's any tax owing. Now, of course, if you're employed, the employer is obliged to withhold a certain amount of money and remit it to the government every month. So you may well every year get money back. I would think a lot of people do, because ODSP is a social benefit that is not taxable, and it's stripped down on your tax return on the first page, second page.
So in all this, it sounds like with the CERB tax policy, they took into consideration the disability community, and so much as even if people do return to work, they might not have a lot of income, as many people with disabilities do require the augment of ODSP.
Well, people who work part-time, full-time, and don't make much money, including people on ODSP, typically wouldn't pay tax. I mean, if you make $1,000 a month at your job, you're not going to pay any tax. There will be withholdings and remittances by the employer, typically, but you'll get it all back the following year when you file your taxes with tax return.
So, have there been any complications as far as people on ODSP actually getting the CERB benefits that you're aware of?
No, it's been seamless, and a person who said that they qualified for EI coverage because they were working and the required number of dollars had been earned over a given period. When they went to apply for EI, they were channeled into CERB, which in most of these cases for the people on ODSP, the amount that they would have received for EI is not $2,000. It's far less. It would be a pittance because it's a percentage of what they were making rather than more than they were making in most cases.
So, do you know offhand if things like RDSPs will still receive the matching that they would in other years, given the circumstances?
Certainly, no question. And maybe this is the year that the person on ODSP makes their own contribution of $1,500 rather than their parents.
So, what do you see coming out of all this?
What I'd like to bring to everyone's attention is something that they may not have made use of, their parents may not have made use of, and that is the Community Volunteer Tax Filing Program. There's a free volunteer tax filing program. It won't save you very much. I mean, if you have your taxes done by H&R Block or some other filer like that, these are not complicated returns. So it's going to cost you, between $60 and perhaps $100 a year. But there is a community volunteer program that will do it for free. Now, you might have to go to some community center or wherever the volunteer organization is put together. But from time to time, we'll do backfiling of taxes for the children of clients. If you don't actually have to pay taxes, you don't actually have to file income tax. That, of course, means that normally you would have received some kind of small rebates, green rebates and HST rebates and perhaps some rental amount, so even just filing, you'll normally get back, because a person is in such a low tax bracket or zero tax bracket, the social transfers to them are a positive amount. So you're going to get back more than it costs you to file. Plus you have to file in order for the government, federal government, to know what your income is and that it's consistently low so that you continue to get the bonds and the grants, full grants, on your RDSP contributions. If you don't contribute, they don't know how much your income is, so you don't get grants and bonds because you haven't filed. So there are cases where we do, you know, 10 years back filing just to tidy everything up, because previously the child was not approved for the disability credit, couldn't then have an RDSP. We get them approved. We transfer the credit to the parent, the tax-paying parent. We recapture about $16,000 for the tax-paying parent. They then save about $1,600 a year going forward, which funds the $1,500 contribution to the RDSP. But, of course, you have to have filed the child's return, because if they paid taxes, which they don't, then they would have to use the disability credit first. So you have to file their taxes, which you might not have otherwise filed, perhaps, in order to make sure that it's clear that their income is not taxable, so that it can be transferred to the tax-paying parent, and so that the maximum grants and bonds in their RDSP are received. So, you know, for those people who somehow feel stymied, or they think that they'll have to ante up money to do their tax filings, they should keep in mind that, firstly, you can get it done free. And then, secondly, you're going to get back more than it costs you to do it. You just have to talk to the tax filer. They'll know and say, look, you know, when I get my money back, I'll pay you.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Happy to. Thank you.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Patricia Kai, who'll be telling us a little bit about art therapy.
So tell me a little bit about your work in art therapy.
So I have been working as an art therapist since 2010. I primarily work with people in groups. So I facilitated art therapy and expressive arts groups in community-based agencies, such as support centers, drop-ins, community health centers.
So you were telling me previously that art therapy can be used to help deal with things like PTSD, for example. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the benefits there?
So art therapy, a lot of time, is accessed or used by people who have experienced violence and trauma and are trying to deal with the effects of violence and trauma, because a lot of times these experiences are difficult to talk about. Feelings are sometimes difficult to talk about in general, but also difficult feelings are harder to put words to. So art making provides a different ways of communication, different ways of expressing emotions, expressing thoughts and ideas, and in some ways that I can support people to make new connections about their feelings and their thoughts and how they're living in the world while living with the effects of what has happened to them. So sometimes that's support people to move forward in the way that they prefer.
Now, when you say move forward, does that mean the art therapy is their sole means of expressing what happened, or is it sort of a gateway into being able to talk about it in conjunction with the art itself?
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be the only way that people express themselves through the arts. Sometimes, and I've worked with folks who found that it is certainly a start to figure out a way to deal with the effects of trauma and violence rather than avoiding it and yet still having these effects impact their lives in ways that are harmful to them or get in the way of them trying to do things that they want to do in life. So in that sense, people feel like they can move forward in life in their preferred ways of being in that way.
So what are some of the challenges in initially getting somebody going with art therapy? Say, they're in a place where they just can't deal with things. So it's recommended they do art therapy. What would be the first step in getting them to at least try to use that as a means of expression?
I think one of the most frequently, one of the things that I most frequently hear when people first start is that they're not good at art. They've not done it since they were in grade school. They don't know what it's going to be like. Usually what I try to do is to say, just get into it. Just make a line on a piece of paper. Try to use a color that speaks to where you're at today. It's more about the process than it is about the product. Partly it's about being in the here and now, and so that's part of what I do in terms of my philosophy in art therapy. So that's something that I try to support people to do anyway. And a lot of times once people get started on their own, a lot of times people find it enjoyable just on their own. For me, primarily, it's creating a space where there is no pressure to make something or not. And I have also worked with people who are not interested in art at all, and so I wouldn't try to push or convince them that they must use it. So to some degree, when people come to me and say, or people join a group doing art therapy, they're already somewhat interested. So that's part of how people can get started. It's just to, and I also ask people, so, you know, when you sign up for this group or when you connect with me as an art therapist, like what was it that made you feel interested? And so that's just really conversations about for people to be able to say to themselves, you know, what is it about connecting with art that speaks to what's important to them?
I'd imagine there's a stress reducing factor in actually creating something with your hands, or even if it's a guided process, just actually creating gives the mind something to focus on, and it would tend to reduce stress, I would think.
Mm-hmm. There's certainly, people certainly a lot of times would say they find it relaxing. It's, people a lot of times compare it to, or make it, or express that it's like, kind of like meditation, that people do meditation. People are in the zone and then they don't realize the time goes by and feel very relaxed. Certainly, art making has that effect for sure.
So, in your time as an art therapist, what's been the greatest success you've seen?
I think success in terms of it's defined by how people, like what people say they get out of the experience. I think a lot of times, because I do groups, a lot of times I feel that I have accomplished what I had wanted to do when people connect with each other on a deeper level through the art, so not superficially just like saying nice things to each other, but really are able to have a meaningful, supportive relationship and understanding with each other through the art in the group, where people start to support each other, is not just the therapist or facilitator who is doing the support. And I think that kind of community building is something that I think it's the heart of what I try to do.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Are you heading out to a cottage this summer? Well, here are some helpful tips to stay bear-wise while enjoying your cottage vacation. Put garbage in containers with tight-fitting lids and only put it out on garbage day, not the night before. Remove grease and food residue from barbecue grills, including the grease trap, after each use. When packing up, remember to remove all food from inside your cottage. A box of pudding or fruit-flavored dessert mix is all it takes to attract a bear. Remember that you are responsible for your own personal safety. Take necessary precautions when you are outdoors, and don't invite any bears to the cottage this summer. Visit ontario.ca/bearwise for more information on bears.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information on this, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from attorney Ken Pope and from art therapist Patricia Kai.
In this segment of our show, we'll get an update from Kyle Vose about his disability work. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with PWA.
With PWA?
Yes.
So right now we're still open because of COVID, so we haven't closed. We are still doing all the services that we, some of the services we did in the past, so we still have peers, supporting peers. We're still doing intakes, we're still doing our essentials market, we're helping people with medication access, doctor's appointments, financial assistance. We're pretty much, we just started haircuts right now, the last couple of weeks, and we have a naturopath clinic that's going right now, so we have almost all of our services are going, just a couple of things still haven't started up again, like the massages.
So I'm guessing a lot of things have shifted to a virtual format given the situation.
Some things, yeah, like meetings and trainings. Like, we're not doing as much trainings in that as much now as keeping the other parts of the agency going. But now we're getting more volunteers back, so now we're able to start doing some of the more work. Like, a lot of the committees just stopped working, right?
So, you were on about a year ago telling me a little bit about your work with the ODSP group. Has there been any progress in that sense?
With this government, there's not been a huge amount of stuff, but we have made, like, we know that the definition of a disability is no longer going to be changed, according to them. That's no longer being looked at. We know that they listened to us about the CERB. Well, not exactly listened to us, but they heard what we were having to say about the CERB, which is a Canadian Emergency Risk Relief Benefit. And so they treated it like income, and so people on ODSP that were working were able to get it. They haven't heard us regarding yet. We're going to make a whole bunch of noise. We're actually having a meeting tomorrow about the cutting off the COVID emergency benefit because we think that it should still be extended, and we think it should be retroactive. So there's some things we're still fighting about. Just some of the things we made progress on, like the online reporting, that they're starting to use that in January. That came through. And they're talking about doing a portal for those people who aren't on ODSP yet, that might want to be on ODSP, and when they do the application process, they'll be able to do it online, through an online portal, as opposed to doing all the forms by hand.
So I'm guessing the online portal would be in an accessible form, something that takes into consideration vision loss. Or...
And also to accessibility, like how many people don't live an hour to their agency? Like if you look at North Bay and other areas, right? There's some people that live hours to their closest office, and there's no transportation. How are they getting there and back?
So, what have been some of the challenges presented in getting your voice heard with all your disabilities work during this time?
During this time is the fact that we can't see a lot of people. A lot of people are being told to stay home. We know that there's a lot of people on ODSP that don't have Wi-Fi. They don't have computers, right? Maybe if they're lucky, they have a smartphone. I can't be very smart speaking. A smartphone that they can use, but that doesn't guarantee that they're going to be able to access all these meetings and trainings. So that's been a hard part trying to reach people, right?
So how are you going about spreading the word to those who could potentially benefit?
So what we've been doing is we've been trying to connect with as many groups as possible. So we've done a lot of webinars, we've done Zooms with other legal groups and other social groups or active groups, and just getting them to spread the word. We're getting into the newspaper, we've done Twitter, we've done some Facebook. So we're trying as much as we can out there. And then also our conferences don't always have to be that you can get a computer, so you can call in, right? So we're allowing people to call into our meetings.
So... have there been any recent successes for either the Action Coalition or PWA that you'd like to share?
For the Action Coalition, I would say that the fact that the online webpage and the online portal is something that we've advocated for many years. Also this year, I was able to meet with the Department of Dental Benefits under the ODSP, and so we were able to advocate, and they are going to set up meetings with the dental college and surgeons to see about advocating for better dental benefits for people on ODSP. So to me, the fact that they're willing to meet and discuss is really great. For PWA, the fact that we were able to, when people weren't able to come in and get food, we were created a program that we were able to make deliveries across the city of Toronto. So at one point we had over like 75 people that we were delivering food to, and families and people with mobility issues or the health issues. The fact that we haven't closed our doors, we stayed open. We may not see people as often, like they're not the same regular hours, but we're still meeting with people online and connecting with them, and we're still being able to provide all the services that they need, so that we're not seeing people, anybody fall through the cracks.
So what are the next steps going forward in your advocacy work?
What I would say my going forward would be, there's a couple projects that I would like to work on with the hospital. So there's a couple HIV projects that we're working on. There's a campaign we want to work on with the provincial government that's talking about extending the COVID benefits, working on raising the rates. There's so much work that I could be working on, but just making life better. Like with the HIV, we want to see working with the hospitals and how people, when they get diagnosed, how quickly they can get connected to care, which means connected not only to medication, but connected to agencies and supports.
So have there been any special considerations for those with HIV who have been receiving the CERB?
Well, I would think that a lot of people, not a lot, but I would hope that there would be a lot of people that are on that are on ODSP, for example, with HIV, that they would be working or being able to work, and that they were able to, like, maybe they just need their drug coverage, right? And so that's why they get the drug coverage from ODSP, but they were getting their money from working. And then maybe we've seen this where people were dog walkers or doing other, you know, self-employment jobs. Now, because people don't need a dog walker, they've been laid off. So now they've qualified for the CERB. They still get their medication coverage and they're getting more money. So we've seen that's how a lot of people, not just HIV, but other people with disabilities that were working were able to get some money during this period. We like to see more people get money. So we wrote a letter to the Prime Minister saying with that $600, that it should also be opened up to people that don't qualify for the disability tax benefit or seek the disability.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
My friends, I must say I was both impressed and relieved when I heard what Ken and Kyle had to say about the whole funding situation concerning these hard times. For a person with a disability, living on an assisted income, it can be difficult to find the appropriate ways of getting the resources they need, particularly if there are appliances or steady diet of needed medications. These things might not always be covered. I mean, there's the myth and the misperception out there that everything will be taken care of, that life with a disability can take care of all your financial worries in some ways. That's a stereotype that I think happens all too often. But the fact is, this is real relief, this is real support in these times, and it's giving at least a fair chance to those with disabilities to maintain, if not improve, the quality of life that they have. For the fact is, in any given situation that affects all the people, it affects all the people, including those with disabilities. We must never overlook that fact, that life is not complete without all the members of the tapestry. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.